Good day. I am Kim Harden, and I am reading Decatur Herald and Reviewed for you today, Friday, May 29th, 2026. I want to start with a quick check on the weather for you. Today, high thin cloudiness, wind 6 to 12 miles per hour, and a high of 82 degrees. Tonight, clear, wind 4 to 8 degrees, and a low of 61. Saturday, partly sunny. Wind will be variable between 7 and 14 miles an hour with a high of 80 and a low of 56. Sunday is going to be beautiful as well. High of 79, low of 57. Same kind of wind, 6 to 12 miles an hour. And back to Monday, partly sunny, 82 for the high and 57 for the low. It's going to be just a beautiful few days for us. Hope you can get outside and enjoy it a little bit. And opening with the headlines in the paper today in politics, starting with state news, Dick Durbin warns of deep divisions. He cites Lincoln's House Divided speech in farewell address, story by Brendan Moore of Capital News, Illinois, in Springfield. As he closed his address before gathered members of the Illinois General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker in the Illinois Capitol on Wednesday, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin invoked the words of another favorite son of Springfield. Abraham Lincoln in the House Divided speech that he gave here in Springfield gave a grim warning that the divisions in America over the issue slavery could destroy our nation. Durbin, 81, said from the dais of the Illinois House Chamber, "We see similar divisions today. The challenges we face in the days ahead could be just as serious," Durbin said, referring to efforts to undermine democratic norms like accepting the outcomes of elections. "I hope that those of us blessed to live in this land of Lincoln will remember his warnings in 1858 and his counsel to those who led this nation in our time." Durbin delivered what was billed as a farewell address, reflecting on his record in office while urging state lawmakers gathered to pick up the torch for the causes he championed. The East St. Louis native will retire next year after 30 years in the Senate, most of it spent as the chamber's influential number two Democrat. He has been a fixture in Illinois politics for more than half a century, from interning for U.S. Senator Paul Douglas while attending Georgetown University to serving in the U.S. House before his election in 1996 to the Senate seat Douglas once held. Durbin never served in state elected office, losing a bid for Illinois Senate by less than 2 percentage points in 1976 and for lieutenant governor in a landslide in 1978. But he did work in the Illinois Capitol, serving as parliamentarian of the Illinois Senate in the 1970s. A bridge across generations, and his influence extends further than that. More than 3,000 worked in Durbin's office, including Representative Cam Buckner, Democrat of Chicago, and Senator Mike Simmons, Democrat of Chicago. Several women in the legislature are alumnus of the Illinois Women in Leadership Training Academy, a group co-founded by Durbin's wife, Loretta, for which he provided seed money. "Think about the arc of history this man has lived and helped lead," Buckner said. "He interned for Paul Douglas in the 60s. He worked for Paul Simon. He served with Carol Moseley Braun. He later helped guide the mentor Barack Obama. This is not just a resume. This is a bridge across generations of Illinois leadership." Reflecting the infinite game of public policymaking, Durbin highlighted some of his top legislative accomplishments while acknowledging the work that remains. He recalled his challenge to Big Tobacco in the 80s, referring to it as the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. He remembered catching a last-minute flight that required him to sit in the plane's smoking section. "I said, 'Isn't there something you can do?'" he recalled asking a gate agent. She said, "No, but Congressman, there is something you can do." So I got on the plane, sat in that center seat between two chain-smoking sumo wrestlers. What did I say? There's got to be a better way. Durbin subsequently introduced legislation that banned smoking on commercial airline flights, eventually getting it passed in 1988. He also touted legislation banning the marketplace of tobacco products to children, which he credited with a massive drop in the number of high school students smoking. Before I rest on my laurels, I will tell you that, unfortunately, cigarettes have been replaced by vaping, Durbin said, urging lawmakers to do something about it at the state level. Proud to be the son of an immigrant, Durbin, whose mom was an immigrant from Lithuania, kept her naturalization certification for decades, and he displayed it in the credenza behind his desk in his Capitol office. He said he wanted people to know that he's proud to be the son of an immigrant. Throughout his tenure, Durbin has been the chief champion of proposed legislation that would grant legal status to undocumented people who were brought to the United States as children. Known as the DREAM Act, the legislation has been introduced several times but has never passed both houses of Congress. I'm still committed to the DREAM Act, and I hope that you'll join me and recommit, Durbin said, noting that it was once a bipartisan idea and arguing that it should be once more. Durbin was also known for bringing federal dollars back to Illinois Senator Doris Turner, Democrat of Springfield, credited him with securing the funds for the Springfield Rail Improvements Project, which aims to consolidate all rail traffic through the city's downtown corridor. Durbin joked that one of the most interesting issues he faced was to stop one damn fish from getting to Lake Michigan, a reference to an effort to keep the invasive Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. I can't tell you how many millions of dollars we spent for poison, for electroshock, for disco bubble machines. We've tried everything and we've done it, Durbin said, then crediting Pritzker for advocating for the ongoing Brandon Road Interbasin Project. The reception for Durbin was generally warm, with Pritzker, Auditor General Chris Meitzer, and three of the seven justices of the Illinois Supreme Court joining legislators in the House chamber. Freedom Caucus boycott. Members of the arch-conservative Illinois Freedom Caucus, however, boycotted Durbin's speech. The only good news is that this career politician is finally retiring, said Senator Andrew Chesney, Republican of Freeport. It is long overdue. Every legislator who actually cares about fixing this state should skip today's political theater and get back to work. Pritzker's campaign called the caucus boycott disrespectful and an embarrassment to our state. Democratic Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and former Illinois Republican Party Chairman Don Tracy are their party's nominees to succeed Durbin. Tracy watched Durbin's speech from the gallery while Stratton didn't attend. I want to thank Senator Dick Durbin for his long service to Illinois. We have real policy differences, but I respect his years of dedication to our state, Tracy said in a statement. This seat has been held for a long time. The question now is, what comes next for Illinois? You can respect someone's service and still believe it's time for a new direction. Reflecting on his upcoming retirement, Durbin said the thing he'll miss the most is having the opportunity to help so many people. In closing, my life has been genuinely enriched by helping people from our great state and nation. I hope that yours will be as well, said Durbin. In local news, Scott Perry writes from Decatur, Mayor Moore Wolf to seek another term. Julie Moore Wolf already has the distinction of being the city of Decatur's longest-serving mayor. On Thursday, she announced her desire to extend that record tenure by another 4 years. It has been the privilege of a lifetime to serve as your mayor, Moore Wolf said in a video statement posted on Facebook. We have accomplished so much in the last decade, but there is more work to do. So today I am announcing my intention to seek another term as mayor of Decatur. Moore Wolf lists her top priorities for the coming term as focusing on ways to reduce the property tax burden on residents, to enhance and grow the local workforce, and to increase middle-income housing opportunities to attract new residents. Moore Wolf, who was elected to the Decatur City Council in 2009, was appointed the city's first female mayor in 2015 following the sudden death of Mayor Mike McElroy. She was subsequently elected mayor in 2017, defeating challenger John Phillips, and re-elected in 2019, besting Councilman David Horn and Jacob Jenkins in a three-way contest. She ran uncontested in 2023. Former Mayor Jim Rupp served from 1967 to 1977, and former Mayor Gary K. Anderson served from 1983 to 1982. In her announcement, Moore Wolf attributed much of the community's success to partnerships forged with other taxing bodies. When we have challenges, we work on them together. We also build our own success stories when we've got opportunities together, she said, adding those partnerships also extend to labor and businesses. She made specific note of $137 million obtained for various transportation projects in the community, including the Brush College Road overpass, which is expected to begin carrying traffic over the railroad tracks along Ferries Parkway later this year. It has been 2 years under construction, but more than a decade of working hard in Springfield and Washington, trying to bring that money home, she said. She also highlighted the recent addition of the Decatur Moves microtransit system, a cooperative effort between the city and the county to provide transportation for people to places like work, the doctor, and the store. The municipal election is in the spring of 2027. In addition to the mayor, Decatur voters will elect three council members. Those seats are held by Dennis Cooper, Lisa Gregory, and Pat McDaniel. Jennifer Schweikert writes from the Illinois State House, Capital News, Illinois, a story, AI Accountability Bill Passes. Following in the footsteps of New York and California, Illinois state lawmakers passed a bill Wednesday that seeks to increase transparency and accountability among the largest and most capable artificial intelligence models. Senate Bill 315 passed unanimously in the House with Wednesday and now heads to the governor for consideration. Legislators modeled the bill after 2025 laws in New York and California, hoping to further a national standard they say is lacking at the federal level. This legislation enacts critical protections against the most catastrophic risks that advanced AI systems pose to public safety, House sponsor Representative Daniel Dedick, Democrat Buffalo Grove, said. Artificial intelligence is among the most significant technological developments of modern times. It has the potential to drastically improve the quality of life of people throughout the world, but only if deployed and developed responsibly. SB 315 is targeted towards the most capable models developed by the largest companies through its thresholds, $500 million in revenue and a massive computing measurement. OpenAI and Anthropic both supported the bill throughout its process, and it passed the House 110-0. As these models grow more powerful, this kind of enforceable accountability matters more than ever, Cesar Fernandez, Anthropic's head of U.S. state and local government relations, said in a statement Wednesday. Illinois lawmakers have set a new standard, and we hope other states and the federal government build on their dedication to AI safety. Senate sponsor Senator Mary Eddy Allen, Democrat Libertyville, compared the technology to the Wild Wild West and said lawmakers can't take the same approach they did with social media, an approach that was minimal until recently. This is not about stopping innovation, but rather about balancing the great promise of AI with its potential harms, Eddy Allen said while introducing the bill in committee on May 13th. In a 52-5 vote, state senators approved the bill last week. The bill would require developers to create and publish a transparency framework explaining how the company applies industry standards, measures model capabilities and chance of catastrophic risk, and identifies and responds to safety incidents. Developers would also be required to employ third-party auditors to ensure compliance with the framework, a provision that is still a point of contention for some industry stakeholders, including TechNet, a coalition of tech executives across the industry. We remain concerned that Illinois would effectively be requiring private actors to make highly subjective determinations requiring AI safety compliance without established national standards, certifications, or clear regulatory guardrails, TechNet Representative Ninia Linero said in committee May 20th. Advocates like Secure AI, a nonprofit seeking meaningful AI regulations, supported the third-party requirement. Dedick said he had conversations with House legal staff and the AI working group of lawmakers conducted research to see if there are companies that can effectively conduct those audits. Given the fact that there is already a developing robust ecosystem of these small boutique firms and also the large international accounting firms that have the capabilities to perform these audits, we were comfortable keeping it in the bill, Dedek said. Later, amendments also addressed concerns from Senate Republicans, Secure AI, Anthropic, and the Illinois Emergency Management Agency by clarifying third-party qualifications, what the audit should include, and protocols for protecting proprietary information. Lawmakers also extended the effective date from 2027 to 2028 and added an amendment saying the bill doesn't create a pathway for private citizens to sue. The Illinois Attorney General would have exclusive authority to enforce civil penalties up to $3 million per violation. Amendments also require large frontier developers to file disclosure statements with primary contacts and places of business and to pay proportional fees to cover the expense of administering the act. The bill now heads to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who said he looks forward to signing it in a post he made on social media Wednesday evening. Turning now to national news about the Supreme Court, Maureen Grappa of USA Today writes, on the docket, U.S. justices enter decision season. Here is a look at the biggest cases. The Supreme Court is set to continue rolling out decisions for the term as the justices rule by early July on issues ranging from presidential power to culture war fights over guns and transgender athletes. The justices are only about halfway through handing down opinions in the nearly 60 cases they heard. The court doesn't announce in advance which decisions are coming and often drops the blockbusters in the final days before its summer recess. Here's a look at the biggest outstanding cases. Birthright citizenship. After the Supreme Court ruled against President Trump's tariffs in February, the president predicted the justices would also strike down his effort to sharply limit who qualifies for automatic U.S. citizenship. Trump signed an executive order on the first day of his second term directing federal agencies not to recognize the citizenship of babies born in the United States if neither parent is a citizen or lawful permanent resident. The order is widely viewed as a legal long shot, and the justices have more than one way to stop it. They could rule that the order violates the 14th Amendment's citizenship guarantee to all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. The court also could rule against Trump more narrowly by finding that his executive order violates the 1952 immigration law. Federal Reserve, other independent agencies. The justices also seemed unlikely to let the president fire Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. But in another case, a majority of the justices appeared ready to side with Trump on the issue of presidential control over other independent agencies. Such a historic decision could redefine how more than a dozen agencies operate, shifting power from Congress to the White House. Other curbs on immigration. In another dispute over presidential power, Trump argued the courts have no say in his decision to end deportation protections for Syrians and Haitians. Curtailing a humanitarian program for hundreds of thousands of immigrants is a significant part of Trump's efforts to restrict immigration. Immigrant rights advocates are challenging the determinations, saying the administration reached predetermined conclusions about whether Syria and Haiti are safe for the migrants to return to. But the administration counters that the law creating the Temporary Status Protection Program bars any judicial review of which migrants may live and work in the United States. The administration also wants the option of bringing back a migrant management practice to limit the number of asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border. Under the practice, federal officials stand at the border and prevent undocumented migrants from physically setting foot on U.S. soil, at which point they would have the right to seek asylum under U.S. law. The Justice Department asked the Supreme Court to overturn a ruling requiring the government to process claims from people who reach a port of entry. Mail-in ballots and campaign spending. In one of the biggest cases of the term, the Supreme Court has already shaken up this year's elections. an ideologically divided court on April 29th severely limited the scope of the landmark Voting Rights Act, making it harder for racial minorities to challenge electoral maps as discriminatory. That ruling set off a scramble among some GOP-controlled states to impose new maps more favorable to Republicans. Republicans also asked the court to reject some states' grace period for late-arriving mailed ballots. The case tests Mississippi's law allowing absentee ballots mailed by the by election day to be counted if received within 5 days. And Republicans, including Vice President J.D. Vance, are hoping the court will scrap a federal limit on how much parties can spend in coordination with candidates. The cap was passed in 1974 as part of Congress's response to the Watergate scandal that upheld by the Supreme Court in 2001. Trans athletes. The court handed several setbacks to the LGBTQ plus community in the past year, including a March decision rejecting Colorado's ban on conversion therapy for young people. The court said the ban infringed on the free speech rights of a Christian counselor. The justices also are expected to back efforts in more than half of the states to prevent transgender women and girls from competing on female sports teams. But the court may leave unresolved whether states must impose such bans rather than simply being permitted to do so. Gun rights. 4 years after the court expanded gun rights by creating a new historical tradition test for firearm rules, the justices continue to wrestle over how to apply that test to various laws. In a case argued in January, the justices sounded likely to strike down a Hawaii law requiring gun owners to get permission before bringing a firearm into a store or other private property that's open to the public. Property owners always had the ability to restrict weapons, but Hawaii and a few other Democrat-led states flipped the default, prohibiting guns unless an owner gives express permission rather than allowing guns unless they're expressly prohibited. In another gun rights case, the justices may loosen a federal law aimed at keeping firearms out of the hands of dangerous or irresponsible people. During the March oral arguments, the court debated whether a Texas man's regular use of marijuana is good enough reason to criminally charge him for owning a gun. It's a felony under the Gun Control Act of 1968 for anyone who is an unlawful user or addicted to any controlled substance to have a gun. Roundup, cancer claims. An ongoing battle over whether the popular weed killer Roundup causes cancer could get curtailed or supercharged depending on whether the justices allow the manufacturer to be sued for failing to warn of cancer risks from the active ingredient glyphosate. Bayer, which acquired Roundup maker Monsanto in 2018, faces billions of dollars in potential liability. The company has said it may have to stop selling glyphosate to U.S. farmers if the lawsuits continue, a scenario major agricultural groups say would pose a devastating risk to America's food supply. The justices are deciding whether a federal law regulating pesticides prevents Roundup users from suing Bayer in state court. One successful litigant who said he developed non-Hodgkin lymphoma after years of exposure to glyphosate was awarded $1.25 million by a Missouri jury. Ariel Cohen and Savannah Behrman write from Washington, hantavirus Ebola outbreaks reveal divisions. The Trump administration's shakeup of the United States public health apparatus in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic has public health experts concerned about the country's ability to respond to emerging disease outbreaks like hantavirus and Ebola. Whether that's a concern for Congress, however, often depends on the member's party, a reaction that should be familiar to anyone who lived through the highly partisan response to COVID-19. There are 41 Americans being monitored for hantavirus, a highly deadly pathogen after an outbreak on a cruise ship off the coast of West Africa. And at least one American has tested positive for Ebola, and six Americans had a high risk of exposure after an outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo that is suspected of killing 223 people as of Monday, according to Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data. The overwhelming message is that Americans are at very low risk from these diseases. But some say lawmakers' ad hoc funding of some public health programs, the expiration of others, and Trump's administration's significant cuts at the CDC are not helping. There might be misconnections or missed opportunities for information sharing, which can add up to delays in response or understanding what's happening on the ground, said Josh Mashood, director, Associate Director for Global Public Health Policy at KFF. Those kinds of things in an outbreak situation can be very dangerous. And locally, Donette Beckett tells us that Mid-State Cup soccer to get kicking this weekend in Decatur. The Mid-State Cup, a Decatur Park District soccer tournament, will be held May 29th through 31st at the Decatur Soccer Complex, One Educational Park. More than 136 boys and girls club teams from across Illinois and surrounding states will compete throughout the weekend. Tournament schedules and additional details are available at midstatesoccer.com and on the Mid-State Soccer Club Facebook page. Admission to the event is free. We're excited for our coaches and players to have the opportunity to compete at home in our beautiful complex, said Kip McDaniel, Mid-State Soccer Club director. It's especially meaningful for the families of our athletes who typically travel often to be able to watch their kids and grandkids play locally. For more information, call 217-454-3472. Back to some briefs on national and world news. Americans with Ebola will be kept in Kenya. The United States is setting up a facility in Kenya to quarantine U.S. citizens who were exposed to Ebola and will not bring them home if they develop symptoms, the White House said Thursday. The strategy marks a sharp break from the previous outbreaks as President Donald Trump's administration seeks to keep all cases out of U.S. territory. The World Health Organization declared the Bunta Biogo strain of Ebola, for which there is no approved vaccine or treatment, an emergency of international concern this month, and cases are rising sharply. More than 900 suspected cases and more than 200 suspected deaths have been reported thus far. Data breach. California Attorney General Rob Bonta filed a lawsuit Thursday against the genetics testing company 23andMe over a 2023 data breach that exposed genetic and other personal information of an estimated 6.9 million U.S. customers. The breach began in April of 2023 and lasted for about 5 months. Bonta said about 856,000 Californians were affected. COVID-19. The FDA's advisory panel recommended Thursday that COVID-19 vaccines for 2026-2027 immunization be updated to target the dominant XFG variant, despite some staff concerns about limited data on currently circulating strains. 8 out of 9 panel members voted in favor of the recommendation, while 1 abstained. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court sided with a Black Death Row inmate in Mississippi on Thursday who accused prosecutors of racial discrimination in blocking Black potential jurors for a trial in which he was convicted in 2006 for his role in the murder of a grocery store owner. Terry Pitchford claimed that 4 Black potential jurors were unlawfully dismissed. Housing. Sales of new U.S. single-family homes fell in April as the boost from better weather faded and mortgage rates remained elevated. New home sales dropped 6.2% to a seasonally adjusted annualized rate of 622,000 units last month, the Commerce Department's Census Bureau said on Thursday. Unemployment. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits rose 5,000 to a seasonally adjusted 215,000 for the week ending May 23rd, the Labor Department said Thursday. Economists polled by Reuters forecast 211,000 claims for the latest week. And in U.S. economy, the U.S. gross domestic product increased at a rate of 1.6% annualized rate last quarter, the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis said Thursday in its second estimate of first quarter GDP. Growth was previously reported to have advanced at a 2% pace. This is Kim Harden reading for the Decatur Herald and Review for May 29th, 2026, concluding part one. We'll take a short break and I'll be right back with you on part two. Thank you.